Gettysburg Seminary presents the Seminary Explores podcast. Conversations on faith, art, people, politics, theology, life, and more. With voices from around the corner and around the globe.
Hello, this is Kristen Johnston-Largen here with Gettysburg Seminary's Seminary Explorers podcast, and I'm very delighted to have as my guest today Vince Evener, who is our new one-year Reformation history appointment with the possibility of renewal and maybe longer, depending on how everything unfolds with searches that we have before us and faculty configurations. But we're delighted to have you here, so welcome. And Vince, I just thought it would be really nice to kind of take this opportunity before the semester get started. This is when we're taping this anyway. We don't know when it'll air, but to say a little bit, so kind of take this opportunity to be able to introduce you to our constituency and hear a little bit about your background, hear a little bit about your work, and talk about what you see as sort of interesting current aspects of Luther and Reformation studies from your background and things that you're excited about as you think about the coming year. So welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Well, I understand that you, this is kind of a welcome home for you in some ways. You grew up in this area.
Yeah. So I grew up in central Pennsylvania. So about, it would be an hour north of here if you could drive straight there. It's about an hour and a half because of the way the roads work out, in a small town called Millerstown.
Okay.
Not to be confused with Millersville or Millersburg or any of the various other Millers.
I feel there was a distinct lack of creativity in some of the city naming, I just have to say, but.
Well, there were a lot of Millers apparently.
And we didn't, they all deserve their own little place.
Yes, yes.
Well, did you come to Gettysburg as a boy then?
Yes, you know, in fact. I was a frequent visitor to Gettysburg as a boy, maybe through my early teenage years. My mother would occasionally get a day off work. My sister or I would get to choose where we wanted to go. And my sister wanted to go to Hershey Park because she was, normal. Quote unquote normal, but I was very interested in history and at that time in the Civil War, so I always wanted to come to Gettysburg.
That is so funny. Did you usually went out, or was it half and half?
It was half and half. It was half and half, unfortunately. I think she enjoyed Gettysburg. We climbed on the rocks.
I was going to say,
Yeah.
I think it's really exciting. I mean, we've of course, and you will have this experience too, right? You have many people who want to come and visit you, and so you do the battlefield tour more than you can imagine. But it's to see all the monuments and stuff. We've had kids come when children of our friends and stuff, and there's something about it that is very exciting, especially the castle on the top of Little Round Top.
Right.
That is something to be able to go up in there. So,
well, as an adult, I'm impressed as I never was as a child by the scope of it.
I often run
along what, as you do,
right,
were the battle lines, and it's an extraordinary.
Yeah, it is big.
Terrifying.
Length
of people that was stretched out.
Yeah, no, it's definitely true. It is a little bit hard to imagine. The joke is always in the summer, inevitably you'll be stopped at least once by someone who says, "Can you tell me where the battlefield is?" It's always like you have to sort of probe a little bit more. What are you actually looking for? Because you're on it, the whole thing. So, yeah. So you grew up here, and then where did you go to college?
Kenyon College
in
Ohio. Actually, I went to my first year I did at the University of Pittsburgh at Bradford.
Okay.
Which is northwestern Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
Very close to New York. And then after my first year, I transferred to Kenyon College.
Yeah.
Looking for a bit more of a challenge, I suppose.
Yeah. And were you interested in history, church history, Luther, even then?
That's a good question. I was, without my knowing it, in a sense.
Oh, that's interesting.
I bounced back and forth between a history and a political science degree.
Okay.
I always, have still a strong interest in politics. And eventually I decided for history simply because I found it more fascinating. I don't know, at one point I realized that I was writing all of my history papers about the history of Christianity.
It was just sort of happening, and then you suddenly stopped and thought, this is interesting.
Yeah, it was almost a sudden realization, like, wait a minute, this is my, fifth history, you know, research paper.
Really?
It's actually on religion. I wrote my senior thesis on early Anabaptism.
You did?
In fact.
Yeah.
But I declared as I was leaving undergraduate that I would never go to graduate school.
You never make statements like that. And, just and, don't ever do that, because really, you get punished for that, I feel.
Yeah, eventually.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really wanted to do something, you know, practical and important. So, I moved to D.C.
So, of course, we're all the important practical people are.
I work for a law firm.
Okay.
But, you know, I gradually felt the pull back, back to school and to study, that it was, you know, it was what I was really interested in doing, what really excited me.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, being in D.C. has a way of convincing you that people need to change, you know, not just policy, but the way they think. Like, thinking is a very important thing to the way a society functions.
Yeah, right. That's interesting.
That inspired me.
Yeah. How we think affects how we talk to one another, right, and vice versa.
Sure.
And, yeah, it does feel like we're sort of at the point where...
And the ability to see other perspectives, too.
Yeah.
You know, to be open to them and not immediately hostile.
Yeah.
So important.
Yeah. It's interesting. I mean, I'm just sort of thinking about, you know, this impetus to want to make a difference, to want to do good, you know, those kind of things. And I think we all sort of feel that way. And I think it's really, it's a gift that takes so many different shapes. You know, we need the people who are in D.C. doing that kind of work, and I could never in a million years do that kind of work. But the dedicated thinking and reflecting, and then to be able to bring that and teach and form learners is also really important, but in a different kind of way, I think, too. So, yeah, I don't know, just thinking about that. So you decided to go to graduate school, and how were you thinking about graduate school?
How was I thinking about graduate school?
Well, like, where you wanted to go, what you wanted to do.
Boy, I'm going to end up confessing a lot of...
Oh, excellent! did you pass someone on the street who said, hey, Chicago?
You know, I really thought... I was interested in a couple things. You know, my interest in Anabaptism had to continue to grow.
Oh, okay.
Grown into a broader interest in Christian pacifism and just understanding this sort of the courage and the impetus to take that stance, even at great personal sacrifice.
Okay.
I was also very interested in, you know, theory of religion, sociology and anthropology, which all of which is to say I knew I was interested in religion, but I didn't have a strong sort of idea about what that meant, nor was I a Lutheran at this time.
I was going to ask you, so were you practicing Christianity at this time also, or not so much?
I would say, no, well, the answer is no.
Okay.
This, you know, my broader sort of spiritual autobiography, I grew up in the Church of God, which anyone who is from Pennsylvania or Ohio might know of, the Church of God General Conference, the Weinbrenners.
Okay.
Actually, there's a Weinbrenner parking lot down by the park in Gettysburg. There may be some connection.
So there you go. Yeah, who knows?
Which is a very, you know, they're focused on renewal.
Okay.
You know, you might sort of put them in a holiness tradition. At
least. Okay.
That's sort of what the emphasis was when I was growing up.
Does it relate at all to the Anabaptists going back, or is it something totally different?
The Weinbrenners grew out of the German Reform tradition.
Okay,
And it was a movement for, you know, adult baptism following an authentic experience.
Got it.
So, and you know, in a sense, in that tradition, I never sort of felt up to par.
Yeah.
But personally, you'll begin to see why I became attracted to Lutheranism. I never really felt up to par, and also, in all honesty, it was... You know, a tradition that, you know, on the issue of homosexuality was very, very troubling to me. Very,
okay.
You know, seemed, you know, I couldn't understand how a sort of exclusion in Christianity should go together. Or maybe I should say I couldn't understand, you know, why I would want to be part of a tradition that, you know, was based on exclusion and hostility. And eventually Christian involvement in war became very troubling to me.
Okay.
But then... Yeah, so I was slowly brought back, you know, in this way that I never expected, you know, the Anabaptist witness was so important to me. As after I graduated college, you know, I would date myself, you know, the world suddenly seemed like a very violent place.
Yeah.
But that ability to draw such powerful inspiration from the scripture, from, you know, the life of Christ was just inspiring to me, and that sort of pulled me in. And coming to graduate school was really by chance. I didn't know what I was doing. You know, to be honest with you, when you're supposed to go to graduate school, you're supposed to know what you want to study.
Yes, and that's what I tell our students.
You're supposed to know what you want to study, who you want to study with, and they're supposed to study that exact thing.
That's exactly right.
So I went to a place where nobody did anything that I... that I had any particular interest in, and I ended up working with Susan Schreiner, who was doing her work on Luther, and I ended up worshiping at Augustana Lutheran Church, Hyde Park, and that's really, you know, this is quite some years now.
Did you honestly, like, throw a dart at a map and say, yeah, Chicago, why not? I mean, why not anywhere else? Why not anywhere in D.C.? Why?
They gave me the best offer.
Okay, well, that is not unimportant.
And there aren't a lot of master's opportunities. It's very hard to get into a PhD program without a master's, but there aren't a particularly large number of master's programs in religion.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, that's interesting.
So,
sure.
Chicago's a big one.
Yeah, absolutely. One, so. Absolutely. Well, and obviously, great people, you know, a big faculty. Yeah, of course.
It was a fantastic place to study. So,
that's wonderful.
Yeah.
So you kind of just fell in, you started taking classes, and you got interested in the work that Susan was doing. Why don't you say a little bit more about her area of specialty and what she...
Well, she's a Reformation scholar. She did her initial work on... Calvin, more than Luther.
Okay.
Her most recent book is on certitude in the Reformation.
Certitude?
In fact, I shouldn't say certitude in the Reformation. It's certitude in the early modern period. She sees the age as... she's really interested in, like, the character of the age, and she sees the age as defined by a quest for certitude, to have absolute certitude. And with the Lutherans, in particular, it was certitude of... individual salvation. You know,
okay.
I want to feel, you know, I want to know that I am saved. And that's, you know,
that's interesting.
What Luther, you know, obtains with his, you know, discovery about faith.
Do you agree with her argument? Do you think overall that's it's a valid generalization and a valid point about Lutheranism, would you say?
Yes. I think it's a valid, I think it's a valid argument. I my own work is deeply indebted to her, and I kind of build on it. Obviously, you know, certitude itself becomes a problem. This is where my work comes in and intersects with hers in terms of, you know, I have certitude. Oh, I know that I'm saved. Oh, wait a minute. Do I have that certitude from God or the devil? You know?
Oh, right.
And this becomes a problem, but... you know, my own work looks at how, you know, suffering, the experience of suffering is part of the answer for Luther.
Yeah. Say more about that. What did you...
For Luther, it's key that faith is directed against reason. God says, you know, I'll give you salvation, you know, for free. You don't have to earn it. And reason says, surely I've got it.
Surely. You know? Surely you need something.
You know, there's got to be something. And behind that is this desire to have, like, sort of, you know, what we might call self-esteem in a sort of, in a sense that you know, I'm able to offer something. I'm not that bad.
Right.
And so for Luther, when it comes to sort of accepting salvation as a gift, there's always a suffering involved in that. There's a going against yourself and everything precisely that, you know, you really want to believe and know about yourself. So spiritual suffering is very important for Luther.
Yeah.
And sort of defines how he regards all the outward suffering we have in life. So, you know, I have an illness, for example. That can be a way to exercise my faith, because faith is trusting in God's promise, and not trusting in myself. All of your life, all of your suffering becomes sort of reorganized around, you know, around the concept of faith. But whereas, you know, where it comes into sort of, you know, helping to confirm truth or to confirm spiritual experience, and, you know, to the question of do I have true faith or don't I have true faith, if the faith I have exalts me in some way, if it leaves that sort of, you know, self-esteem intact. I think that I don't want to, there's a different type of self-esteem.
No, I know it's tricky. It's tricky.
It's a tricky thing to talk about, but there's in a sense, if the salvation I've received is in some way in harmony with my will and in harmony with my reason, in harmony with my fallen will and fallen reason, then it's probably false.
Yeah.
If I have a faith that tells me I can earn salvation, probably false.
Well, this sounds like this also gets a little bit at the theology of glory, theology of the cross, or theologian of, you know, there's some of that too, right? That challenge. I mean, it has to. Yeah. It's interesting. This is a total tangent, but when you were just talking about that, the kind of the suffering that is inherent in the realization that, no, you're actually not the person you thought you were. You're not this. I was just thinking about all the conversations that we've been having lately about race, you know, in this country. And I think part of the real pushback for a lot of people is having to deal with this realization that we're not this colorblind society, that we're not these post-racial people, that we're not, you know, and that's, it is, it, there is suffering in that. It's really painful to have to deal with that. But I think, I hadn't thought about this together, but I was thinking, and for me then, if I'm going to extend the parallel, it feels like in the same way that Luther would say, you can't get at this real trust in God, right, unless you're willing to accept that and let go of this false vision of yourself. Our society is not going to be able to, I don't think, move forward until we're ready to sort of give that up. I don't know.
I agree. I mean, I think Luther is, one of the things that's extraordinary about Luther is how effective he is at dissecting self-justification. And that, you know, the subtle ways in which reason always kind of gets in there and messes up your salvation one way or another, you know. But self-justification is, you know, a part of all of our life, including our political life.
Yeah.
You can come up with a lot of reasons to make ourselves feel good about the policies that we might engage in.
Yeah.
And at the same time, you know,
maybe
you know somewhere in the back of your head that those are just self-justifications and something else is going on. And I think that sort of habit of criticism is something that can be learned from Luther.
Yeah.
It's very important.
That's nice. Yeah, I mean, it's always, you know, it's exciting to hear you talk about, you know, your own sense of, you know, your research and then the ways to bring that to students. Because I think one of the challenges is to say, okay, on the one hand, we could study Luther in sort of the historical box, but of course not. We want to think about how this is relevant, why this matters, how we sort of bring this. And it's always kind of amazing to me some of the things that you read, like in his whatever, you know, the large catechism, and you know that how it was written so long ago, but you think, oh, this still is really the same dynamic is going on, you know, in a lot of ways. It feels to me like it's still really relevant.
I think that's one of the challenges, you know, teaching history, whether it's to undergraduate seminarians, it's sort of, there's this, it's really easy to regard history as irrelevant. Now, Luther sometimes is easy because of the, you know, the way he writes, the way, you know, it's so clear what's going on. But, you know, like the ancient Christian creeds can be troubling, the Book of Concord, you know, it can seem like a bunch of people who were discussing an obscure issue, and you know,
it's true.
Not only obscure issues, but kind of the wrong issue. You know, why were they?
Were they wasting so much time?
Why are they wasting so much time? But I think if you do work to understand the history, you can really start to see the relevance. What's at stake? What's at stake in a Trinitarian debate? So often it was salvation.
That
was at stake. How can God interact with creation? How?
Right.
You know, is creation even good?
Yeah,
you know,
those
sort of fundamental issues are there. And they're still with us. They're still those sort of fundamental questions if you approach the world from Christian faith. Maybe even if you approach the world from any other perspective, you know, the goodness of the world, the source of evil, those are still.
Yeah. No, it's true. You're right. You're right. Yeah. Well, what, as you think about your teaching here in this new context, you had some exposure, of course, when you were in Chicago to the Lutheran seminary there. What have you thought about that sort of exciting or challenging or interesting about being teaching in this context in a seminary?
The great thing about being in a seminary that versus, say, you know, an undergraduate context is you don't necessarily have to make, you know, the relevance arguments are strong, but you often find interest.
Yeah, that's true. That's just, you will find interest in Luther here.
Reformation
history.
You know, and that's just a wonderful experience and very exciting for me to, you know, presume that the students are engaged, excited.
Yeah.
To me, this is a very exciting place to be because I know that what we do in the classroom is going to have importance for what goes on in congregations. I know that, I sincerely hope that, you know, students would come out of my classes with a sense of how much history can be a resource for them, how much, you know, Luther's own writings can be a resource for them, how much the Lutheran past can be a resource for them, and a sense that they, you know, belong to something that has been going on for a very, very, you know, long time.
Yes.
And, you know, maybe Lutherans are hostile to tradition, but, you know, that's not really how the Reformers were.
No.
It's not really, you know, the fact that the gospel had always been proclaimed from, you know, for Luther from the Old Testament on
it's
so important. I'm, you know, I'm excited by the opportunity to teach that to students here.
Yeah. Well, that's fabulous. Well, we are just thrilled that you're here, and I think the students, they don't know you yet, but they will, and they're going to be really lucky. We got to watch you do some teaching when you were here for your interview, and that was so much fun. It's just clear that you're a really good natural teacher, and I think it's fun for us to hear a kind of a fresh perspective coming out of a doctoral program, and I think it's going to be great. It'll be good for all of us to kind of have some more of these conversations, and I think we're all looking forward to it. So welcome, and we'll look forward to seeing how the year unfolds.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for being with us. Great. Thank you.
You have been listening to The Seminary Explores from Historic Seminary Ridge in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, a production of Gettysburg Seminary. We invite you to visit our website at www.ltsg.edu. Opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of Gettysburg Seminary or the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America.